This is Autoline After Hours, Episode 1 for Thursday, April 2nd, 2009, Automotive Socialism. Watch Autoline After Hours live at AutolineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2400 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in the iTunes Music Store. Here now is Peter DiLorenzo, the auto extremist, Gonzo PR ace Jason Vines, John Neff of Autoblog, and of course, your host, John McElroy.
Here we go. Let's get started with Autoline After Hours. And what a week we had. I can't believe what's gone on in this industry from the momentousness of it and the unexpectedness of it, at least for me, and what's happened since we last got here together. So, Peter, let's start out with, from your vantage point, what went on? Here's the President of the United States essentially firing the CEO and chairman of General Motors. And I know President Obama says, hey, I didn't fire him. Well, guess what? Yeah, he really did fire him, of course. What do you make of all that?
Well, I hated to see it. I thought it set an ugly precedent. I just don't think the government should be going in. And I'm sure our readers read some of the stuff in Auto Extremist. Did you see the on-the-table item we did about the guy who ran the small supply? He's a small supplier in Ohio. The guy from Washington showed up on his doorstep and said, you're out. And then they're demanding him to merge with the guy who owned the lawn and garden store over in the next county. I mean, where does it stop? But Obama needed a body, flat out. And they needed a symbolic thing that we're really changing. And Rick became the fall guy. Is Rick totally culpable in this? No. He was there, but a lot of the stuff that happened under his watch, he couldn't do a damn thing about. But they needed a body, and so he was the closest one to the door.
What do you make of it, Jason?
Well, you asked this question, should these guys be broomed? And
right.
I think we said, what good is it going to do? I think it showed the character of Rick Wagoner to take the bullet, not just for the team. He took it for the industry.
Yeah.
And I give him a lot of credit for having that much character. It is a bad precedent. When will it stop? I watched NBC News the other night, and they asked Greitner, don't you think it's a little unfair that, you did this to the auto industry, but you didn't do it to the banking industry? And you go, I don't see any problem with what we did. So the double standard continues. But, it's a lot of crazy stuff going on in Washington. They're retroactively using the tax code to penalize the AIG guys for the bonuses. Now, the bonuses were heinous, and those guys shouldn't be taxed. They should be lined up and shot, but not taxed. We cannot use our tax code to penalize individuals that way. So there's a lot of craziness. We're in uncharted territory right now. It's scary.
And let's not forget that the plan that GM presented to Washington, who was the prime mover behind that plan? Fritz Henderson.
Right.
So,
but don't you think Fritz knows exactly what he's got to do right now?
Oh, absolutely.
Because if you go to the White House website, and you can look it up, it's whitehouse.gov. Just poke around in the news release area or do a search on GM. You'll find it. They laid out point by point by point by point, page by page by page, what they did not like of the GM plan. And there was a lot of stuff to pick out there. So I know with Fritz getting in, that's got to be his marching orders, point by point by point by point, how he's exactly going to turn all that around.
Well, yeah, and he made it clear at the media conference the other day. We've got 60 days, and I'm going to get it done. And everyone said basically how, and he said, I'm going to get it done, so we'll see.
Well, he's going to get it done, or I think it's very possible there'll be a new CEO of 60
days. Oh, I think it's very probable if he doesn't get it done.
Well, but also you saw in the interviews that he conducted yesterday, he's expecting them to be along for the ride as far as they're making these. They're going to be looking over their shoulder. So hopefully it'll be maybe like a teacher looking over your test going, mm-mm-mm.
I mean, who would have thought that this industry would come down to this? I mean, it's just absolutely incredible after all this time.
What do you guys know about Fritz at all? What kind of a CEO do you think he's going to be? And, I mean, he must have got the message, hey, you better change everything very quickly or you're gone too. So, I mean, do you expect to see a Fritz Henderson like we've seen before or somebody altogether different here?
Well, he's always been kind of a little bit in the shadows. He's a very smart guy, very experienced around the world. I think he's very decisive, too, and I think he's seizing this opportunity, which he really didn't want thrust upon him the way it was. If you read, he wasn't very, I mean, it wasn't pleasant. I mean, he worked with Rick for, what, 30 years or 25 years?
Well, he was there 20-some years, and most of his career was working with Rick. I was really impressed with the press conference the other day. I thought his answers were succinct. I thought he showed a lot of confidence without being cocky. And the fact that they had the press conference the other day. Now, they could have said, hey, boys in the media, girls in the media, we have work to do. We don't have time for your crap. But no, they got out there. They answered the questions.
And he was pretty upbeat, too. I mean, this was not a guy who looked like he had been beat down by this process at all.
I would have liked to have seen him at least do a statement first instead of go right into the, this is our new deals. They had Mark Lenave come up and do the deals. I would have said, no, we're going to have Fritz do a statement. We'll get to the deals later, but, you know, it seemed kind of herky-jerky at the start. But Fritz is a smart guy, so if they're going to make it, he's as good as any to try to do it.
And he has touched all the bases at GM.
Yeah.
From foreign operations, procurement, supply. Let's remember, he was the president for the last few years, and he's well-respected. He's a no-nonsense guy. And so that's what they need. If they couldn't have Rick, and let's put Rick behind us now. It's no use really arguing anymore if it's an outrage or what it was right, if he deserved it, if he didn't. Fact is, Fritz Henderson is there. GM has not 60 days. They now have, what, 57 days?
and counting.
Yeah, and it's going to be intense. And they're going to have to bring all the parties to the table, including the bondholders, the UAW again. And it's going to be long hours down at the Wren Center in Detroit. My issue beyond that is who had the other report from Treasury? That was Chrysler.
Right.
And they have less time.
30 days.
That report from Treasury was damning. It said you are not a viable company without a hookup. Although there were claims going into it from Chrysler, they thought, oh, even without Fiat, we're going to be viable. And these Treasury guys, maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, but they said you aren't viable. You got 30 days.
Well, I don't think Nardelli has any credibility. Zero. And I think that that was proved by he's been all along these statements, you know, we're there, we're going to be there, we're going to be there. And then they get there, and it's just like, hey, you got to be kidding me. You're nowhere. You can't survive without a partner.
And, you know, right. Fiat flies into town this week.
The Linguini offensive begins.
And they've got now 28 days or 27 days. One could say if Fiat's really intent on getting with Chrysler, why hurry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, GM and Chrysler's not going to happen anymore, I don't think. I don't think that's even possible, the government, considering what GM's
Well, we don't know how the story's going to play out yet. I mean, who would have thought, like Peter started out saying, that we'd be where we are right now? No one would have thought this. Who knows what might develop in the next 30 days?
Fiat, if you think you could get this even a bigger bargain beyond free, which you're getting,
right.
Why wouldn't you just wait?
Because there's the danger then somebody else swoops in and buys it before you do or bids a little bit higher. Why not get it? You're getting Chrysler for free right now. How could you not turn that deal down? I mean, how could you turn that deal down?
Well, perhaps if you could get parts of Chrysler for free.
The good
You're getting
parts.
The whole thing for
yes,
free. You look,
that's where he's going. You're talking about the good parts of GM, the bad parts of GM.
How cheap does free have to be for you? You're getting the whole thing free. There's still a lot of capability there. You know, all they need is some more cash. They can hire a lot of people back yet. That, you know, if the economy were to pop up, if, I'm not saying when or right now, but, you know, you could pop that thing back up. Some good design, I mean.
Well, that was the problem with GM's plan, though, is they had all these, you know, when the economy turns around, we're going to do this, this, and this. And the Washington was like, Boy, that's optimistic, boys.
And should we really sit up and pay attention to that is what I'm wondering. When the administration says your plans are way too optimistic,
yeah.
What do they think is going to happen?
Yeah.
I mean, they're telling the world, hey, we think things are firming up, but they're telling the auto industry, you guys are way too optimistic. I think we ought to pay attention to what they're saying there.
Well, some of the market share and stuff that was in the GM's plan, I was even like, you got to be kidding me, guys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't have gone in there with that. I would have just said, you're killing me here. What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's just way too optimistic.
Hey, John Neff, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, so what do you make of the big change at GM? How are you reading it? What kind of feedback are you guys getting?
Well, we're getting a lot of the feedback, surprised that the president has the power to force somebody to step down. And just like Jason said, why don't they use that on the banking industry? And this double standard is really irritating to people who follow the auto industry. But I was wondering, did you guys read that article in Automotive News today about the good GM, bad GM idea?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The Journal had that several days
ago. New a non-executive chairman.
The chairman said something about, you know, if Chapter 11 happens, it'll, you know, a plan might be to separate the company into good parts and bad parts, which is something, you know, a long time ago when this started, well, not a long time ago, but last year, you know, in my mind, there's so much redundancy in General Motors that for a shrinking economy, you know, there really only needs to be the good stuff, Chevy and Cadillac. That covers everything else all the other brands do anyway. But what stopped that from happening is, of course, the UAW, a giant dealer network, half of which that doesn't want to just disappear overnight. But, you know, I get the feeling after today, and especially after this, these words by the new GM chairman, that might be what we're moving towards, a radically smaller GM, maybe just Chevy and Cadillac to cover everything.
You make a good point, John. It's Jason. Here's the question, though. I was talking with David Welch from Business Week the other day, and... Now, the president showed he had the power to make a CEO go. Does he have the power to go to every state now and take their franchise laws for dealers and just tear them up and say they're worthless? By my decree, dealer franchise laws are no good, and we're going to pick, the administration is going to pick, instead of 500 dealers in California for GM, we're going to pick the 50.
That's going to happen.
And we're going to assign which brands you get.
You bet. That's so, exactly what's going
to
happen.
And this is not going to go to court. Is that what you're
right?
telling me?
Yeah.
It won't go to court.
That's how it's got to be done. I mean, because if they go into bankruptcy anyway, they can rip that up. And so the whole idea...
So they can rip up the UAW contract.
Yes, they can. Absolutely. In fact, you know, it was interesting. I just saw, where did I read that? Wilbur Ross was saying, they're giving 30 cents to the bondholders? He says, I'm surprised they're giving them anything. Now, there is a guy who knows how to restructure a company. And, you know, you would do the same to the union. You know, why are we pouring tens of billion dollars into the VEBA when the president promises us he's going to have national health care in the first term? So, I mean, think about it. If we're going to have national health care, then why are we pouring hundreds? Anyway, we're getting off track here.
Well, you're showing something that's so complex, but I don't agree with you. There's no magic wand here. I don't think you can go in and wipe out all the dealer franchise laws in one fell swoop without... We do still have a legal system. We have a court system.
Okay, Jason, let's
and
say
it gives
that
them dealers, and I'm not speaking for the dealers, it still gives them the ability to use the court system to say either this is unconstitutional, this is based on states' right, and the federal government has no reason to meddle in this. So this just doesn't happen.
Right.
And so we're caught in a court system now for months, years, where it doesn't get resolved, so we don't know where GM's going to send its products. And the UAW says, fine, you're telling us we have to do this. Well, we figure this is the end. We're not going to go to work. Okay, so GM doesn't make any products. There's no revenue coming in. And it doesn't matter if it's 60 days. It's zero. It's gone. And what implication then does that have if they get that type of plan with the UAW? What does that mean for Ford? Because Ford's out there, in some respects, sticking a thumb in GM's eye saying, we don't need any government help.
All right.
And what
happens? Here's the dealer problem, as I see it, is, look, they don't want to screw their dealers. They're on the brink of bankruptcy. The government's got a knife at their throat. So what do you do here? And you've got to shut down three brands you know of. No one's shown up to buy them yet. Maybe Hummer, they're saying right now. But Hummer, Saab, and Saturn got to go away. What do you do with the franchise agreements? How many billions of dollars is tied up in honoring, you know, being able to shut those down from a company who doesn't have billions and a government that doesn't want to give it to them? Certainly the population of America doesn't want to see them get any more. You've got to come to some sort of agreement. Just like the bondholders are taking a haircut, just like the union's taking a haircut, the dealers are going to have to take a haircut. And I'm not trying to, you know, dictate what it, I'm just saying that's the reality. The whole game has come to a collapse.
You're talking about a dealer body, many of which have recently, and we're talking within the last year, thrown in millions of dollars into their showrooms so they look very modern and they're the right. highest tech they can be.
Well, the Hummer dealers in particular spent fortunes in as recently as 3 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, you can make the same argument that, you know, GM itself has thrown billions into revamping its entire product line to be better than, you know, it has in decades, right at the same time that the economy collapses and nobody buys these great products. You know, it's bad timing, you know. I'm kind of the mind that what John just said, you know, this is all collapsing. Everybody is going to get screwed. And, you know, we're sorry that you invested all of this money in the hopes that you'd get a great return, but nobody saw the economy tanking. You know, nobody had that foresight, and this is the result. And you kind of have to deal with it. If you want a GM at all tomorrow, you're going to have to take that haircut.
Well, Bob Dylan, everybody must get stoned.
here's something we got to talk about. This just came out today. Turns out that GM bondholders, some of them, went out and got insurance on their bonds. In case GM were ever to go bankrupt or something go bad, you can take insurance out on the bonds. You're all going to be able to instantly guess which insurance company they went out and insured those bonds
with. AIG.
AIG. AIG. Now, it turns out, the federal government is going to bail out all those credit default swaps of AIG insurance people who have got GM bonds. And so these bondholders will get 100% back on their bonds if GM goes bankrupt, because AIG will pay it, thanks to us, the taxpayers.
And AIG was holding the bag, but they won't be, because it's taxpayer money that will take the bag out of their hands that they're holding.
Right, right. And so here's a whole interesting wrinkle on the whole GM bondholders versus UAW, who's going to blink first kind of concession thing. Is some of those bondholders, and we don't know who or what yet, or certainly I don't know, could make out like bandits with AIG having to pay off on their bonds if GM goes bankrupt. It's just amazing how this, you can't believe how we haven't hit the bottom of this crap yet.
Can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. Here's one other thing, too, that I had written down in notes I wanted to talk about. Interesting little story. It goes back about 6 months ago. This is before the big meltdown at GM. And I was talking to a guy who had worked with both Fritz and with Rick in his career. No longer at GM, so he wasn't trying to hitch his wagon to one or the other. Had worked with him in a domestic assignment and overseas assignment. And his whole assessment was, and this is what he told me, that Rick could not hold a candle to Fritz Henderson. And so while everybody has been saying all along that, you know, well, it's not going to make much difference if you change the management at GM, I'm expecting electrifying change. And I think based on kind of what this guy told me, we can expect a totally different pace with Fritz Henderson coming in. And I think Fritz got the message loud and clear. He's going to come up with a solution, or he's going to be, you know, a 60-day wonder, as it were. And I think we're going to see a lot more change come very quickly, especially out of General Motors.
They've got no choice. They've got 57 days.
What else did Bob Lutz tell you?
No, that wasn't him. And does anybody follow the, you know, what's going on the board? You know, Peter, they're going to broom the whole board out here, aren't they, or most of the board?
Deservedly so. I mean, I think the GM board has been an embarrassment for a long time. And, you know, we had a fantasy board on our April Fool's site, but I won't go into that. But, yeah, I didn't – that's no big surprise. As many as six of them are going to be taken out, or all of them, I don't know.
Right. Maybe, you know, a blessing for the board members, too.
Oh, I'm sure.
These board members have had the hell beat out of them for the last 5 years?
Yeah.
When Kerkorian and York came in.
I know, you know, another supplier executive that I talked to was very curious why General Motors had George Fisher on the board. Now, George has been, you know, like this with Rick, you know, Wagner.
Yeah.
Extremely outgoing, you know, press conference or, press release, supportive of Rick. But this was a supplier CEO saying, what's this guy doing on the board, you know? He ruined Motorola, he ruined Kodak, and now he's approving the ruining of General Motors. I mean, it was very interesting to me. You get a lot of good feedback from the supplier community as to what, because they deal with these companies all the time. But, yeah, they're just I think, again, we're going to see a lot of change at GM very shortly. I think we're going to be astonished at the pace that comes. If not, you know,
It's over.
And what's next? You know, what's the next shoe to drop? And you threw out the word I want to talk about, the supplier community. Talk now that half of the major supplier community is within days or weeks of bankruptcy.
Listen, Chrysler, there's stuff going on right now today. Chrysler can't get parts.
Right.
It's at the Windsor Assembly, and it may shut down Bramalia.
Right.
They're trying to resource
engine
those.
Mounts.
Yeah, they're trying
they
to resource
They can't get engine
those.
Mounts. Hey, and if you miss one part in a car, guess what? You can't build it.
Unless you're Jerry.
hey, changing topics completely, and John, we got to get you in on this. What do you guys make? Peter Horbury leaving Ford Design and going to Volvo.
Yeah, you know, when I saw that, I didn't understand why he'd want to move from, you know, guiding the design language of Ford to Volvo, which is, you know, a brand that Ford is trying to jettison as fast as possible. The only thing I can wonder is that something else was going on. He chose to leave. He didn't want to be at Ford. But I haven't spoken to him about it, so I don't want to speculate. But.
Well, maybe it's a precursor to a deal where whoever's going to buy Volvo, they wanted some continuity, and they wondered, can you give us any continuity? And I wondered that about Jim Taylor when he was moved from Cadillac to Hummer. You know, whoever's buying him, you know, you are going to get someone, you know. It either has something to do with that, or they just didn't want him around the design center.
I think that's how you get rid of somebody.
Yeah.
You put them in a company or a division that, boom, but, is getting
I mean,
kicked
Volvo's
out.
Half a step out, so it doesn't look good.
I'll take the positive on Peter, though. He was a part of Volvo's renaissance.
Correct. Okay? Absolutely. Transformed their design.
So that's why it might make
right.
sense that
and
he's going
that
with
time,
them.
Volvo, we're going to talk about brands.
Yeah. Right?
Volvo has lost its brand appeal, much of it, in my opinion, over the last
four
or five
years. Well, the sales would reflect what you're saying.
What do they stand for? Oh, they're safety. Well, safety, everybody has about the same safety right now.
Well, they used to own it. Now it's the price of admission.
And
that's a huge difference. So their reason for being is like...
They're not distinctive anymore, and maybe with the sale, but also
really?
Somebody
I think your cars are distinctive. I like their product lineup. But,
I didn't say I didn't like them, but...
The rest of the world doesn't agree with me. I'm just basing it on their sales, and they're losing money hand over fist.
They always stood out, and especially when Peter came on and gave them that modern feel, but they still stood out on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Striking. They don't stand out anymore. And then there's the joke that somebody asked somebody at Ford last November, does every Volvo come out of the factory with an Obama for President sticker on it? And it is true. But I think for whoever buys Volvo, I think they just got a coup. In getting Peter.
Well, there's no question about it. The guy's an absolute top-notch designer. I think he's done really well at Ford, and that's why you got to say, why is he leaving? And to me, Ford design staff has been a real mystery. You've got a VP of design who's not based at headquarters. He's out in
London.
In London, right? And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It's just a very curious arrangement that neither Ford nor any other car company has ever used before. And there's always been turmoil, I think, on the Ford staff, design staff, and I think this is just more reflective of that. This is just an outsider watching who's been watching. That's how I read what's going on. John, what do you hear? Anything, ideas of what's going on at Ford design staff?
No, I haven't heard much, but, I mean, I would say just personally that the designs coming out of them right now I like very much. And I don't know whether it's...
And especially the stuff coming out of Europe, which is, you know, again, where Jay Mays is based, who's running for design. The stuff coming out of Europe, I think, is very good.
The kinetic design stuff's really good. And that's what's coming here, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that said, I wasn't... I was still a huge... Not a huge fan, but I was still a fan of the Ford 3-bar grill. I thought that worked well in the Fusion and some of the other products without getting too carried away. But I'm happy to see the kinetic stuff come over here as well, because I think Ford of Europe has just a real edge, a real advantage with their design over the competition there, and it would play great here. And yeah, I mean, you know, you put that to the Fiesta, which is about to arrive on U.S. shores, and that could be, I mean, that car has huge potential here, being small but premium, hopefully not too expensive, great design. And kind of coming at a good time. I mean, if people do start buying cars again, they're probably going to start at the low end to be comfortable. And, Ford hasn't had a product there for a long time.
Where did the current version of the Focus come from? Where did that design?
The U.S. one?
Yeah.
That's a redo of the last generation Focus.
3 years
which
ago.
Which was similar to, very similar to the European one. But this one is just the one John's talking about that's coming here next year is lock, stock, and barrel, the European version.
Good.
I've driven it. It is a knockout good car.
Because the current Focus is opinion, just grotesquely ugly. And considering that Ford has had a lot of hits, especially I love the Lincoln lineup, the new designs coming out of Lincoln. Mm-hmm. They look great. They look rich on the road. And I think that is one of those brands that they got to pull out of the toilet. And it's not there, but it's starting to get some real curb appeal and maybe a voice for Lincoln. And that's been a brand that's been lost out in the wilderness for so long that
right.
maybe getting a little bit of where it could be as a luxury brand of Ford.
Okay, we got a couple of questions coming in here from the audience. We promised we were going to get to them. So first, I'm going to throw this to you, Peter. Will job assurance programs accomplish anything? And I think what they mean is, you know, the Hyundai and now GM and Ford thing, you lose your job, boom, they'll take over payments, at least some payments for some amount of time. Is that going to make a difference in sales?
I think it's going to be a buzz, but I don't think it would make as much of a difference as the trade in your clunker program.
Yeah. Jason, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think they should have a program where if you lose your job after you bought this car, we will come and beat the crap out of your boss. And I think people would go, yeah.
Sign me up.
If you're that worried about your job, you are not going to buy a car.
Yeah.
You're just not going to buy a car. And if you're not worried, then you feel, even though you may not see that there's a bullet aimed at your head, you're probably confident, and if the deals are right, you need a car, and, you know, we're finding out people are holding on to their cars. There is a little bit
of
demand, but I don't think that is a huge thing. I think it was good for Hyundai because it was novel. It's one of those first in, but it's a little bit like employee pricing. GM started that off. Sales went crazy. Then at the time of Chrysler and Ford came a month later, and then Americans got tired of it. They got used to it, and...
Hey, you know, one interesting thing on Hyundai, you know, we've all been watching how their sales go up. I just got some data here that came from Ford's guy in sales analysis that their fleet sales jumped up tremendously. Like 40% of their sales were fleet. And
of whose sales?
A Hyundai. And those people don't get Hyundai assurance. You know, that's only offered to consumers.
Well, the domestic car companies have been trying to wean themselves
yes,
from fleet.
And have.
And they have, and because the analysts would beat them up, it's fleet. And inside the companies, you try to say, you know, there's good fleet, you know, there's
right.
government
right.
fleet, where you, and then there's the bad fleet. There's
right.
the fleet.
Daily rental.
But then the daily rental fleets started getting choked of product, and they had older product on the line, and people started saying, this is not only is this a rental car, this is an old, crappy rental car. I'm not going to rent from Avis or Hertz again or whatever. And so they're starting to need cars. Hyundai has a pretty good deal on them. And by the way, they want to continue to show that they're outpacing the market. So you may say that they're being guilty of what the domestics used to do to pad their sales. So the question is Hyundai making money?
Yeah, but when an import
nobody's making money.
When an import manufacturer does it, it's smart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when the domestics do it, boy, they're just, you know, Neanderthals and need to be put to sleep.
Here we got another question. John Neff, I'm going to you on this one. What could Fiat bring for cars that we could buy in North America? Predictions?
Well, hopefully the 500. I mean, I'll take a whole lot of Fiats, the 500.
Especially the Abarth version. That's what I would love to drive. I want to try that.
Yeah, the you know, the Panda, which is a small CUV, five-door hatch kind of thing. The Bravo, which is a really nice small car, like a Focus-sized car. Their whole small lineup is extremely attractive. You know, no domestic in the U.S. has a small lineup as robust as it. You know, and yeah, I would take pretty much anything Fiat has to offer.
Well, don't stop at Fiat. Start going on Alfa Romeo. What would you bring in?
Well, that'll probably happen too. I mean, that's a way to for that whole company to get a foothold here.
Yeah, Peter says the Mito.
Yeah.
And I think what they just show at Geneva, the 159, was that? I think that's what they just. Any Alfa. Alfa just does the most beautiful cars, you know, at prices that a reasonable number of people can afford.
The Competizione is just gorgeous.
Right, but nobody can afford that.
Yeah, I know.
I can't. But, and then there's even several Lancias, too, that perhaps could end up as Chryslers. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? It won't be Chrysler, though, will it? I mean, if they make this deal, will it be Chrysler or will it be Fiat USA?
Oh, no, I think they'll keep the three brands that they've got. I think they'll select certain dealers to sell, like, Alphas and the 500. In fact, I know that's already being done right now. I know people personally who were working on emissionizing and, you know, getting all the FMVSS stuff together for the 500. It's going to come here the whole deal collapses.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just wondering, is this going to be Chrysler Fiat or is it going to be Fiat USA?
Oh, I
see. And by the way, we sell Jeeps here.
Well, yeah. And so I've heard a lot of people say a neat store would be Fiat on the common the cars, Jeeps with the SUVs, and Alfa with the luxury brand. Mm-hmm. Wow, talk about it, as Chrysler calls it, an Alfa store. That's a pretty nice store. And they hit CAFE. We do know, you know, on the plus side of Fiat, they're leading the way in reducing CO2 in Europe.
Right.
Although,
but that's largely because they only make small cars.
Yeah, it's true. Now, the question is, where is gas going to go? We've already seen small cars fall. When gas went from $4.25 down to $2, small cars dropped off the table like good old Americans usually
do. I just looked it up just out of curiosity's sake. Toyota Prius, and I don't mean to pick on it. It's just an indication of what's happened with hybrids, down 55%.
Did you see they're going to cut the
80-day supply.
They're going to cut the price of the Prius to match the Honda.
The Insight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Japan.
The new one. Yeah, John, what do you make of that? Toyota cutting the price of the new Prius.
We were really surprised by that when they when that news came today, because they had already announced that they were going to keep selling the current generation of the Prius in Japan and price that at the same as the Insight. So I don't know if they're still planning on doing that, but doing the new one, which, you know, is heavily upgraded and revised, gets better mileage, has more power, selling that for the same price as the Insight in Japan is going to make a huge dent in Insight sales. I think they're probably not going to do that in the U.S. though, and I think the Insight is gonna really play over well here. And all Honda has to do is bide its time until gas prices go up a little bit.
And gas is going to go up. Anybody who thinks otherwise is crazy.
Hope is that gas goes above diesel, and diesel gets a shot at a success in passenger cars here in the U.S. Because right now it just has everything going against it. But you drive any of these modern diesels, like the Jetta TDI, the diesel BMWs or Audis, and they're just so excellent. What a great way to combine actually enjoying driving a car and you know, saving a little gas.
Enjoying driving a car? What's that, John?
You're not allowed to do that.
By the time we're done, we're all going to be walking or driving our flatulence-powered balsa wood gliders.
And from what I've seen in the studio, Peter's car will have a large range.
Here's a great question. I don't know if they're gooning us, but I'm going to throw this out here. Can you or your guest comment on Integrity Automotive's decision to not build a Zap factory in Kentucky?
No, I'll consult my BlackBerry, see if there's anything on here. No, I don't know.
You know, Zap is I don't follow Zap closely, but my guy is at Autoblog Green Zoo. And, you know, it's one of those, there's so many of these companies on the green side of things that pop up And it's hard to take a lot of them seriously because of, you know, the prototypes they put out and what you see. And then you have a company like Tesla come along who, you know, has had its fair share of problems, but it established itself as a legitimate company from the beginning. And that's something that, you know, Zap really didn't do, and it's been struggling to do ever since. So, you know, when I hear something about Zap, I always take it with a grain of salt, because I've seen the cars they currently sell. I see their big grand wishes of what they want to do, and you know, really, I don't understand how they think they're going to accomplish it.
Well, look, I've felt from the beginning, and I don't know much about Zap because I stopped paying attention to him a long time ago when I concluded, and I mean, this goes well over a decade ago, it was a stock scam. I mean, they just kept pushing our stock this, our stock that, and that's when people start pushing their stock on you, I back off. I just don't trust them.
So I guess the group believes that the integrity thing with Zap is crap. it's crap.
That's just our conclusion, yeah. So, hey, we were going to talk about rating the brands tonight, and we ought to do that for the show. And, John, join in on us with this. And, Jason, I think you even got some here. We're going to look at the GM brands today.
Tonight.
And how do you rate them?
It's and what scale are we going to use?
I guess thumbs up or thumbs down, or do we need a more graded
scale? No, thumbs up, thumbs down. That's good enough because we nuance between a 4 and a 5 star. Forget it. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Okay. What's first? Show
Pontiac.
It to the show it to the
Pontiac.
In your camera.
Yeah. Pontiac. Pontiac.
If it can't be funded properly, I think it would be a fabulous brand. I'd love to be a multi-billionaire and take it away from GM, but in its current state, it's not going to live.
What do you think,
John? I'd have to say thumbs down, and that kills me because I love the G8. But yeah, overall, you know, again, so much redundancy, so many vehicles that can be sold in other brands like Chevy.
It's too bad. It really is. But
To me, it all depends on, you know, how does GM handle what Holden does? And can Holden export on a competitive basis ongoing? Because Holden's, they're pretty cool. They do some good stuff down
there. Absolutely. GM's strategy was to have like 2 or 3 Pontiacs.
Right. From Holden.
Yeah, which is fine, but in this current state of things, no.
Where do they go when they talk about this as a niche? Where is within a brand?
Well, look at the dealer network now is GMC, Buick, Pontiac. That's the combination.
So yeah, but if you look at that, it's Buick, GMC, and Pontiac. So they want to have sporty vehicles. Buick will be like, you know, family useful vehicles, let's say, and then GMC for trucks and stuff like that. That is all Chevy and Cadillac. You know, again, it's exact same thing.
Yeah, but I see, you know, where you can do a premium thing. I mean, the key reason they're not killing GMC and Buick is easy. They make money. It's just you don't kill something that's making money.
Yeah, that's what they tell Washington. Washington said, "Same, why don't you get rid of Buick? Why? Yeah. Making money." Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. So, and then you could, if you have that channel there where you have luxury truck, luxury car, premium sports car, performance car, you know, and you take the stuff from Australia, which is all plus business for Holden. So if Holden can make a business plan and you're plus business, it's gravy. But now it's just that. You build a whole business model around selling 25,000 of this model and 25,000 of that, and maybe not even that. And maybe it's got to be more like 12,000 to 15,000, but you got to price it accordingly so that you can make money on it. But I'm not ready to write off Pontiac if they do it right. A couple of very niche cars that become far more premium than what Pontiac
so
really is now.
Up or down? You're going up.
I'm going up. I think there's a lot of potential with Pontiac.
Well, that's a huge disclaimer. Forget it.
We can't check it out. Up or down?
Up.
Okay. I don't see how they can do a niche. I don't see how they can do that. I vote down.
Okay. So. I lose. It's 3-1.
Hummer. Oh, it's gone down the crapper for us.
Now, there's a brand absolutely huge outside of the U.S., huge potential. I can't believe they haven't sold it yet. I love the H4 that they showed. Awesome concept. But it's over. It's done in this country.
But it's not done. Do you think they'll sell it?
Yeah, I think they'll sell it.
Okay, we're sticking to the U.S. market.
Oh, right, it's done. Now. It's done in the U.S. market. Okay. Down.
J. John?
Dead.
Yeah, thumbs down.
Ooh, our toilet already broke. Great Born from Jets brand, Saab. Peter?
It was great when it was a niche in the northeastern United States, but it's not gonna last.
Well, you know, the thing that's weird about Saab is it's always been a tiny niche product. Always.
Yeah. Well,
and kind of weirdo stuff. That's how you sell it. Hey, this car is for weirdos. Come buy one today.
That's why it was huge in the Northeast. Huge in Vermont. It was great. And I like Saabs, actually. But, here again is GM doesn't have the money. They can't support the brands, you know. It's too many models, too many divisions, too many dealers.
I wonder if that's it. What do you think, John? Saab.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing goes for Volvo and Saab. You know, Americans just aren't interested in paying this huge premium for quirkiness anymore. They had their niche, and now people are kind of over that image. However, I think it has such history that I would hate to see it go altogether. I hope somebody does pick it up and sell it again here. But for now, I'm going to say its destiny in the U.S. is short-lived.
See, I think if GM hadn't bought it, and they bought it in, 1989, that it had been out of business, long before this. I mean, GM put it on, the operating table and worked for a decade and a half, and they took out all kinds of costs. They added all kinds of product. You know, they did the deal with Subaru where you could even get, your own WRX version, which was much better looking than the Subaru one, by the way. They did this 97X, which I think is...
It's the best Trailblazer ever.
Yeah, the best. But in any case, I mean, they threw everything at it. And last year, Saab did 96,000 cars worldwide. Worldwide.
And good if you're a Bentley.
Yeah, I mean, if they could triple the price of their car, because somebody said to me, well, that's about what Porsche does, and look at all the money they make. Yeah, but their cars are way more expensive than Saab's. And I'm not sure Saab is ever going to make it. It's really kind of never made it. It's been on life support for a long time, because remember, before GM bought it, I mean, it was on life support in Sweden. I don't know if it was the government there or not, but... It wasn't doing so hot. So,
all right, next up.
We all thumbs down. Yeah,
thumbs down. This one to me is the saddest, and this one to me is the. We need a courtesy flush. It's the saddest and maybe the most interesting going forward. Saturn. I say that we have two Saturns in my family. I bought my daughter a Vue last year. Loved the vehicle. The quietness of a Lexus, a V6 in it that's a rocket ship, and it gets phenomenal fuel economy. I just bought my wife one two months ago. Love the vehicle.
The new Vue?
The new Vue. I mean, but the 08 was the new Vue, too.
Right.
So these are both new Vue.
No, surprisingly good vehicle.
Oh, they're just good. Reasonably priced. It's on the chopping block, and they're looking for ways to figure out how to, quote, save it through a franchise agreement that some dealers are talking about it. The question is, where do they get product from?
Right.
And it is a...
Well, once the GM agreement ends for them, they're free to get product from anywhere. So, look, Saturn was a blown opportunity by GM, but that was, to me, Saturn was the high point of the clash of the GM system really starting to implode, because when Saturn first debuted and Hal Reiney basically... creating an aura out of thin air for a decidedly mediocre little car. I mean, really mediocre. He created this aura, and these buyers they didn't even think it was part of GM, and it was this huge success. And then it came time for Saturn to have more products so that these people who bought in initially could go somewhere else. And that's when the long knives came out within GM from Chevy and Oldsmobile, and they said, you can't give Saturn more products because we're dying here. We need the products. And then Saturn languished for years. And now they finally got product, and it's too late. It's over.
It's like Oldsmobile. You know, by the time they killed Oldsmobile, it had a terrific lineup of good product.
Yeah, the Aurora.
GM had a history of getting stuff right just in time for it to
Aurora
die.
The Aurora was good. The Achieva was a lousy car.
Well, yeah, let's not talk about the Jeep. The Aurora was good.
It was a lousy car. But the Aurora was magnificent looking.
John, your take on Saturn.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm going to give a thumbs up to Saturn because I think that, you know, with its brief history compared to other automakers and brands, it's shown me that it's not about the hardware of the Saturn. It's about the name. And I think, you know, after having blown out the brand using Opals and things like that, I think the dealers, if they can get it done, have a very good shot of finding a new supplier. You never know. There's a lot of Chinese companies who want an easy inroad into the U.S. and, you know, a fully built dealer network with great customer service is a place to start. So I'm going to give them a thumbs up. I don't think they're going to go away.
I agree with John. I mean, these dealers are some of the best dealers in the country. Their showrooms are very they're bright, classy looking. And you have a Saturn owner body of the last couple of years that loves their products.
So you sell this franchise to the Chinese or something?
Well, that's the hard part. How do you get cars, SUVs, whatever, crossovers from various groups and have any continuity? You have to have some continuity to it. Or we'll look like car companies of the
70s. Well, the Chinese could contract GM to continue building the product for the time being. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities, but I say stick a fork in it. I think it's dead.
I mean,
God bless the retailers because they're the ones that made the difference. We all know the product wasn't that good. It was okay, and it was durable. It wasn't bad. But the dealer experience, the buying experience was like nothing in the business except at a Lexus level. But Saturn was doing it at a half to a third of the price of Lexus. And that was the brilliance of it. So I'm with you on the retailers are the best in the business or some of the best in the business. But the brand, I don't know. I don't see it.
We got a split here, and I'm not going to be wishy-washy. I still give it a thumbs
okay.
up going forward. All right, we're down to the short strokes here.
Yeah,
We talked a little bit about GMC.
Yeah. And, in fact, we got a question here from one of our viewers saying, what are they keeping GMC for? So what are they keeping GMC for?
They make money on GMC.
All right.
As surprisingly as it is, they do. Although I would not sell a GMC pickup if I were GM. I would get the Chevrolet pickups, but above that, yeah, the GMC, they make money on GMC. I thought the same thing. Why don't we just get rid of it because they make money?
You know, I think when you got a brand, you got to let the brand do what the brand wants to do. And when you say, well, you can't bump into this brand, you know, I think that's part of GM's downfall in its heyday. I mean, Oldsmobile and Buick were at war with each other and loved every second of it. Chevy and Pontiac were at war with each other. And I mean, it made them better. So I don't know. I think that's one of the things that got him in trouble.
But I'm just talking about in the case of the pickup truck. Do we?
I don't know. Well, you know, Ford's done a Lincoln pickup, and
that went over like a pregnant woman.
Well, you know, it wasn't that well executed of a product, and I think conceptually it's a good idea.
They've tried twice now.
Yeah.
Well, they need to try again because I don't think they've gotten it right.
Okay. Boy.
John, what do you think, GMC?
You know, it goes back to the dealers. If you want to have Buick and Pontiac dealers, they're going to have a GMC brand because they need a full lineup. So it's going to be around as long as the BPG dealership.
So I give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, we give it a thumbs up. It's making money.
Okay, John, what does GMC stand for?
Probably a lot of things.
No. Originally, and it's never.
Well, this is part urban legend. No, I know where you're going.
It's absolutely not urban legend.
You're saying the Grabowski.
It's like
Grabowski. Grabowski Motor Corporation.
Which GM bought
right.
in the 30s or whatever.
It was, I think, the 20s.
20s to 30s.
From the Grabowski brothers.
Yeah, that was what GM stands for. Right. It stands for General Motors Corporation. It's not urban legend.
Yeah.
I'll
no, Grabowski was in there, but I'm not. No one's really. Anyway, yeah. Let's go to the next one.
We'll go to the strong two at the end. Buick.
God, I would love to run the Buick division.
I would, too. I'd give it a thumbs up because, you know, Buick is a strong brand in China, the biggest car market in the world. Pretty soon,
yeah,
it's got to survive.
John?
Yeah, I think Buicks in China right now are becoming what Fords in Europe are to the to U.S. customers. It's what we want, and the Chinese are getting all the Buicks that we want to drive. So, but even the Buick product right now is pretty solid. So, thumbs up.
To me, Buick has got a real opportunity because I think it should be the anti-European car, not name or attitude or anything like that, but you get to an Abima and you sit up straight and you feel the seat and the road and in Mercedes, you know, the tight steering. And this should be plush. Okay, let those people, you know, and the roads are bumpy anyway. I'm going to cruise. That's what they got. My whole word would be Buick plush.
Yeah,
and if you sell that, I think no one's trying to sell that. We're all trying to sell, you know, the feel of the road and the, you know, the G-forces, and, you know, there's room for just pure comfort.
And I think GM should embrace older Americans buying these cars. Everybody doesn't want to sell to old people. We know this huge
age.
That's
just because you're old.
I'm a baby compared to you.
The older you get, the more you'll agree to it.
I'm a baby compared to you. But the fact is, look what other products are starting to market to those people and don't make them feel ashamed. Viagra. They go to 40 to 55, 65-year-old men and make them feel cool. There are a lot of cosmetic companies that are going after 55 and 65-year-old women, and they make them feel good and don't make them feel old.
No, if you make this the old person's car.
No, don't. You don't have to make it the old person's car because people think of the old person's car. But don't make the old people feel ashamed.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that.
Don't make that the brand image.
John?
I've actually heard a lot of people argue for just what Jason's saying. It is, and they'll put it more straightly, you know, make Buick the old person's brand. Actually design the cars for them. Make the, you know, the font on the speedometer and the tach, you know, larger and more legible. Make ingress and egress easier.
Yeah. But that should be for everybody. But I'm saying don't market it as the old person's car. I think that's a mistake.
They watch TV.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Cadillac.
It's got to survive. It's one of, if GM comes down to Chevrolet and Cadillac, it's one of the world's great brands.
Yeah, totally agreed.
Thumbs up.
Well, you know, there's a danger, though. I agree with you guys. You know, the CTS, absolute knockout great car. And the rest of the line has got to catch up with that level. It's the latest one out, so you would expect, you know, the latest one out should be the best. If the rest of the line gets to that level, and they consistently do that, they'll absolutely be able to claw their way back into presence of mind and prestige that's with Bimmer and Mercedes. And that's where they got to go, not so much Lexus.
Well, they were nowhere eight years ago.
No, I hear that. But also, one of the keys that made Cadillac so unique is they broke their engineering group out of the rest of GM engineering. They said, you guys are Cadillac. This is what you guys
are. Well, GM's going to go get there pretty soon.
Yeah, I know,
anyway.
But now they shoved them back in, and it's like, you know, again, it's efficiency.
Well, it's just like, you know, I want Pontiac to live. Pontiac used to be the pirates of General Motors. They had their own engineering staff. They'd regularly piss off the headquarters and Chevrolet. They would do things just to annoy Chevrolet, and it worked. But, you know, as much as I'd like to see that, I don't see those days coming back.
Yeah.
GM doesn't have, they'll have one engineering building. By the time they're done, their engineering center is going to be one building at the tech center, one on the campus.
Finally, the big
Chevrolet.
Yeah. The big volume Chevrolet.
You know, what can you say? That's the two pillars of GM, Chevrolet and Cadillac.
Yeah, John, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I just think Chevrolet needs to get some better small cars in there, especially if, you know, they're
the Aveo's dead. What's the Aveo? I think the Aveo, do I have this right? Was the Aveo at 400-day supply? I mean, it was outrageous.
Oh,
I should look that up. But
now, if gas was $4.50, would we have a...
No, it still didn't sell very well.
It still wouldn't sell.
There's something about that car. There's an aversion to... They need the spark desperately.
Well, it's not even that inexpensive. I mean, you know, it gets up there to $13,000 so easily. And it's like, God, there's tons of stuff you could buy new for $13,000.
When's a spark to here? Another
spark
year?
Spark is what, John? Next year or 11?
I think it's at least 11.
I think that's right.
It's not next year.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the Cruze is next, right? And that replaces the Cobalt, which looks incredibly dated right now.
Yeah, but the Cruze will be huge. You put that right under the Malibu, and then hopefully the Beat or the Spark, whatever they want to call it. That's a great-looking lineup. Unfortunately, it's 2 years out.
Now, there was talk a few years about pulling Corvette out and having that as its own brand. But isn't it right to have Corvette as the ultimate Chevy, the king of the brand? That
absolutely.
Hey, yeah, but I fully expected Roger Penske to make an offer to General Motors. I'll buy your Corvette plant from you.
But, you know, Corvette, I'm with Jason. To me, if I were Corvette, you know, if you're going to pry Corvette from Chevrolet, you may as well just stick a knife in Chevrolet.
A grander scale, like Viper for Dodge. Most people didn't go in and buy a Viper, but it was kind of like, oh, this is the company to make the Viper. They'd leave with an Intrepid. It's taken that times five when you come to Chevy with what the Corvette has done.
Yeah, that's still the way it goes.
Right. Although I see on their media site, they break Corvette out as a separate brand. You know, it's Pontiac, Chevrolet, Corvette, blah, blah, blah. So I was kind of surprised when that first appeared.
They're telegraphing something.
Yeah, maybe they're starting to get us used to it subliminally.
Or maybe they're going to sell it to Fiat, so it'll be the Alpha, Fiat, Jeep, Corvette store.
No.
Endless, no, I don't think so.
Endless Green Horizon Motors is the secret.
Well, look, we're at the top of the hour here, so we ought to wrap it up. And, you know, John Neff, thanks so much for joining us. It's great to have you in.
Oh, no problem. Good to be here.
Cool, you know. And Peter DeLorenzo, great. Everybody check him out at autoextremist.com, of course. Jason Vines, go Spartans. Show everybody your Spartans.
Sparty.
We're coming down to the final
Saturday
four.
Saturday night, 6:07 against Connecticut. Spartans by 3 points.
There you go.
I'd say Spartans by two.
Thanks, guys.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. You'll find that and much more at AutolineDetroit.tv.